All right, now this is the third of your reports, so that's extra incentive to understand this stuff. We're doing a technique today called spectrophotometry, and that is a way to indirectly measure the concentration of a solution. There's all kinds of reasons why you would want to do this. We work with solutions all the time in chemistry and biology. And sometimes you know what kind of solution you have, meaning you know what the solute is, but it would be useful to know how strong the solution is, what the concentration is. Well, if you think about there's different measurements of concentration, as we've talked about, but molarity is one, right? If you think about the definition of that, or what molar means, that's the number of moles of solute particles per liter of solution, right? Which means directly measuring that would involve getting in there and counting particles of solute and then dividing by the number of liters you have. Well, that's not possible. Even if you could get in there and count them, you would be counting for multiple lifetimes, because a mole is a ridiculously huge number. Even if you counted them, you know, once per second, you're not going to live close to that number of seconds. Anyway, that's why I say it's an indirect process, spectrophotometry is. It's based on absorbance of photons that I started talking about today. When a photon encounters an object, there's three possibilities. It can be transmitted, can be absorbed, or it can be reflected off into another direction. And the things that we call pigments are simply substances that are able to absorb photons. And that's what spectrophotometry is based on. Now, it's you can take it out of your kit and look at it. It's not a very big device, but if you were to look at it under the hood, so to speak, it has a lamp at one end that shines white light, so all the colors combined. And this is like a top view. At the other end, you have a well where you stick a special tube in. That special tube is called a cuvette. These ones, by the way, are directional. So, first of all, don't touch these cuvettes with your bare hand, because your fingerprints will make your measurements wrong. So, glove up for these. I'm not going to touch one. But when you look at them, it's a square, so it goes in any way you get a square into a square hole. But there's one way that's proper, because the light has to go through the clear ends. Two of them are shaded, or frosted, and two of them are clear. Make sure you're putting it in the right direction. But anyway, that's where your sample goes, in the cuvette well. And light goes from the lamp through the cuvette itself, and therefore through the solution that's in the cuvette. The solution is what you're trying to measure the concentration of. One important thing about spectrophotometry is that it's always a relative measurement. It's never absolute. Absolute means that it's not based on anything else. For instance, when you measure something with a meter stick, that's an absolute measurement. A relative measurement compares one measurement to another. So you could say this is longer than that, for instance. That would be a relative measurement. More about that in a minute. But you have white light traveling from the lamp through the sample. Between the light and the well is a prism. And so white light going into a prism, what's going to happen? What? Yeah, it's just like the dark side of the moon cover. Right? There's going to be refraction, which is bending of light. Well, refraction occurs to a different angle, a different degree, depending on what the wavelength is. So it comes in as white light, and it comes out as all the individual colors. The reason this is important is because you can, by controlling it with the computer, you can, what you're really doing is moving that prism. You're twisting it so that you can choose which color of light goes straight this way. If you turn it down, this one's going to go straight. The other ones are going to get bent off to the side and they're not going to reach the sample. So in other words, by adjusting the prism, you adjust the wavelength of light that actually reaches the sample. And the reason that's important is because you can't do spectrophotometry at all unless, first of all, you have something in your solution that's able to absorb photons in the range of the instrument. And also, you can't get a good measurement unless you set the spectrophotometer up, first of all, to a wavelength of light that the particular stuff you're interested in finding in your solution is able to absorb very well. So you have to know this ahead of time, basically. In other words, you wouldn't go into spectrophotometry not having any idea what kind of solute you have. You have to know what kind of solute you have, and then you set the instrument for a wavelength that that particular substance is able to absorb very well. And you'll get a much better reading that way. Okay, and that's just a matter of adjusting the prism. All right, at the far end, after the well, you have a screen, a collection screen, that will give you an output on the instrument, depending on how many photons strike it. So the more light that makes it all the way through and hits the screen, the more the output of the instrument changes. Okay? Well, there's two ways you can have the output configured. You can measure what's called transmittance, which is the amount of light that goes through, or you can use it in a different mode, which is what you're doing today, and you can measure what's called absorbance. That's the amount of light that doesn't make it through, the amount that gets absorbed. Okay? And that's why you want to set the instrument to a color or wavelength of light that that particular solute absorbs well. If you set it to a color that the solute does not absorb at all, you just wouldn't get any measurements. That's all preparatory work before you even get your raw data. But here's where the notion of it being a relative measurement comes in. You can't get any meaningful measurement unless you first calibrate the spectrophotometer. And you calibrate it by putting in a special solution called a blank in the same kind of cuvette, but you set up a blank as being just like all of your other solutions that you're going to be measuring. We'll call those unknown solutions. You know what the solute is, you just don't know how much there is. Well, there's other ingredients maybe as well besides the solutes. Well, obviously there are at least water or whatever the solvent is. You set up a blank so that it has all of the ingredients except none of the solute of interest. All right? That's a blank. Now, when the light goes through that blank, it's never going to be the case that every one of those photons goes through and does not get absorbed. Some of them are either going to get absorbed or reflected off to the sides, right? But by zeroing the instrument, similar to zeroing a scale before you weigh something, you're saying however much light goes through in my blank that doesn't have any of the solute in it, I'm going to tell the instrument that is 100% of the light. In other words, no absorbance. And when you zero the instrument, it means to the instrument, this amount of light striking it means none was absorbed. That's the relative aspect. That's the measurement that all of your other ones are compared to. And unless you do that zero, all of your numbers will be meaningless. You only have to zero it once. Then you take out that blank cuvette and you put in your sample cuvettes, the ones that have some unknown amount of solute in them. That's what you're trying to figure out, the concentration. Since you've set it up for specifically the light that is absorbed well by that particular kind of solute, then when you put a solution, a cuvette containing a solution that has some of that solute in it, then less light will make it all the way through, right? Because some of the solute particles will absorb photons. And this is why it's an indirect measurement. The more concentrated the solution is, the more solute particles there are in that tube, in other words, the more photons will get absorbed and therefore won't make it all the way through. And the output of the instrument tells you relatively what the absorbance is compared to that blank, which is zero absorbance. Does that all make sense? So what you're measuring directly is an absorbance value, which doesn't really have any units. It's a dimensionless quantity because it's one divided by another and the units cancel out. But it's absorbance at a specific wavelength, so make sure you have it set to the right wavelength when you get the computers running, which I'll probably have to unlock, but the computers are over in that cabinet. What you don't have to do, someone else has done this for you, is to create a what's called a standard curve. So in order to use these values of absorbance, which are not concentrations, right? They're just absorbance values. In order to convert those into concentrations, like molar, you have to first make up a bunch of different strengths of concentration, strengths of the solution that you know the strengths of. You know the concentrations. Those are called standard solutions. All right, this is what you don't have to do. It's been done for you. But using those standard solutions and a blank first to zero it, you measure the absorbance of all those standard solutions. That allows you to graph, since the standard solutions you know the concentrations of, that allows you to graph concentration versus absorbance. Right? And that will give you some sort of collection of points that you can fit a line to. That line is called the standard curve. The idea here is that by using these known values of concentration and measured values of absorbance, you can generate the line and do interpolation to get the concentration from any absorbance in between those values. Does that make sense? So that's what is behind the fact that when you get your absorbance values in the write-up, it tells you to just mathematically convert it into concentration. The reason you're able to mathematically convert it is because someone else did a standard curve for you. And you're using the slope of that curve to actually convert absorbance into concentration. That's why it works. The standard curve is the important part, but usually you would have to generate your own. We just don't have time to do that. Okay, that's how that works. That's just for taking measurements. The other thing I want to talk about, though, is that the author of the packet has made up this backstory, which is totally fabricated story. I want to just actually tell you the truth of what's happening, rather than go around this, pretend this story is true. You are working with an enzyme that is called lactase. All right? It should be obvious from that name that that's an enzyme. Lactase, it gets its name because of its substrate, the substrate that it's specific for, the normal substrate, which is lactose. What is lactose? Okay, more specifically? No. No. It is a disaccharide. What are its constituent monosaccharides? No. No, sucrose is a disaccharide. Glucose is one. I figured someone would take that. And the other is galactose. Okay? A glucose and a galactose hooked together by a glycosidic linkage makes one lactose molecule. And the normal job of the enzyme called lactase is to speed up that hydrolysis of lactose into glucose and galactose. All right? Now, what you really are trying to figure out here in both of these experiments is how well the enzyme is doing its job, which is another way of saying how much product is formed from reactant in a given amount of time. Because that's what an enzyme does, right? It converts reactant into product. So to figure that out using spectrophotometry, you're going to have to measure either the concentration of reactant or product. You could do it either way, really. Right? Because if an enzyme is working well, then in a given amount of time, you should see lactose disappearing, right? So you could measure spectrophotometrically the disappearance of the reactant, which is also called substrate, since this is an enzymatically catalyzed reaction. Lactose is substrate. Okay? The quicker the substrate disappears, the better the enzyme is doing its job. So in other words, you could spectrophotometrically measure how much lactose is present first, and then measure how much less there is after so many minutes. That would be the disappearance of the reactant. You could also, though, measure the appearance of product instead. It would be measuring the same thing, but you'd be measuring it a different way, right? You shouldn't have any product at first. And the more you have in a given number of minutes, the better the enzyme was doing its job. This all making sense? Okay, here's where the problem is. I said before that to use spectrophotometry, you have to have a solute that is able to absorb photons in the usable range. Lactose is transparent to all of the light that the spectrophotometer can use. It passes right through it. It doesn't absorb photons. So lactose is out. You can't get at this answer of how well the enzyme works by measuring the disappearance of the substrate. But you have two products to work with. You could measure either the appearance of glucose or the appearance of galactose. And that would also answer the question. But you have the same problem for both of those substances as well. None of them absorb the light. That's the problem. So we can't use any three of these substances. And we can't therefore use lactose, which is the normal substrate for this enzyme. Instead, we have to use a surrogate substrate. And that surrogate is ONPG. Which, of course, is short for ortho-nitrophenyl beta-D pyranogalactoside. But you can just call it ONPG. That is also a two-part thing, just like lactose is. And it's similar enough to lactose that it will fit into the active site of lactase, just like lactose does. Okay? The two things that it's made up of, if you break it apart, are galactose. Whoops. And O-nitrophenyl. Whoops. Nitrophenol. So an O-nitrophenol and a galactose hooked together make up ONPG. And that will fit, it's slightly shaped differently compared to lactose, but it fits into the active site of lactase also pretty well. And not only that, it will also be catalyzed. It'll also react. It won't just be in the active site, it will actually hydrolyze. Be broken down into galactose and O-nitrophenol. Just like lactose normally would be broken down into glucose and galactose. All right? You following me? Well, ONPG is also invisible to the light. So even if you use ONPG instead of lactose, you still can't get at this answer by measuring the disappearance of substrate. I've already told you that galactose is invisible, so you can't use that either. But O-nitrophenol you can. O-nitrophenol is yellowish, and so it absorbs light in a certain wavelength, which is the wavelength you set the spectrophotometer to get good results on this. And the higher the absorbance, which visually would be the yellower the substance, the more O-nitrophenol is present, and therefore the better the enzyme must be working to convert ONPG into that O-nitrophenol. And the yellower it gets in a given amount of time, the higher the activity of the enzyme. Now, does all that make sense?
Does it make a difference whether you can only measure the O-nitrophenol compared to a different kind of substance where you could measure both of them?
Well, if you could measure both, you wouldn't be measuring them both at the same time. Because that would be confusing. You wouldn't be able to do that and make sense of your numbers. If they were both detectable, then they would have to be absorb different wavelengths. And there, you still wouldn't measure them both at once. You would set the instrument up with a wavelength for one or for the other and measure just that one. But in this case, we don't have any choice because everything's invisible except O-nitrophenol. It's the only one that is detectable.
Because they're coming from the same thing, how would their numbers differ if both of them were detectable?
They wouldn't. It's just that the numbers, if ONPG were detectable, then you would start with a high value and it would go down. That would be disappearance. The better the enzyme works, the more this disappears and gets converted into these. Right? But instead, we're going to have the values go up over time because it's the product that we're detecting. Over time, more and more product forms rather than more and more reactant disappears. That's the only difference. But, you know, for every one ONPG molecule that gets broken, you're going to have one O nitrophenol molecule. And therefore, that's why the numbers would match.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Compared to where it would be double or triple?
No, it would still be a one-to-one correspondence.
Okay.
The only way is if you had, like, two glucoses in a... what is two glucoses? Can't think. Whatever the disaccharide is that's two glucoses, if you split that apart, and assuming you could detect glucose, then yes, it would be double because you'd have two glucoses for each of the original disaccharide.
Okay.
Here you just have one, though, because it's two different monosaccharides. Okay, any other questions? Did you have a question over there?
Yeah, I guess. So is the yellow because it's absorbing yellow light or reflecting yellow light?
No, it's yellow to us because it's absorbing the opposite of yellow, which is blue. Right, it absorbs all the non-yellow and everything else comes back to our eyes, and that creates the perception of yellowness in our brain. But yellow is the complement of blue. It's the combination of red and green. Okay, so this is why we have to use this surrogate substrate. ONPG is also a substrate. And therefore, if you're doing the experiment on the lactose rather than the temperature one, like you guys were doing, I think, what does that tell you is happening? I mean, what do you predict would happen? If lactase, the enzyme, can use either lactose or ONPG as substrate, how do you think that adding lactose is going to affect the conversion of ONPG into O-nitrophenol, which is what this whole made-up story is about? If they both of these things can fit into the active site, what can happen that I've covered in lecture? What kind? They're both trying to get into the same active site. Competitive inhibition, exactly. So without any ONPG, but you do have lactose, a lot of lactose would be converted into glucose and galactose, right? Or I'm sorry, this is the one you can detect. With just ONPG and no lactose present, it would work well because all of the enzymes would be available for ONPG. But if you have a mixture of ONPG and lactose, some of those enzymes are going to be filled by lactose instead of ONPG. And therefore, those enzymes are not going to turn it into anything visible.
Would the lactose be the one that fits perfectly and the ONPG is the one that's just sitting in there, or would it be the opposite?
No, they're both substrates. They're not just, it's not just blocking. They're both potential substrates that can be broken into two pieces.
Okay, so that's not just
They're still competing with each other. But unlike the slide in class, that was a competitive inhibitor that didn't get changed into anything. It was just blocking the active site. Here you have a different substrate that can also be broken, but as long as it's in there, it's blocking the other substrate. All right. Go ahead.
What's buffer?
Buffer is just a solution that keeps the pH pretty stable. Remember how important pH is to enzymes in general? This way, if something adds acid or base to a solution, if it's buffered, then the pH won't really change very much. Any other questions? I think that's all I wanted to say. So it's probably been long enough. I don't know how long I've been talking, but there's nothing magic about 30 minutes. If it goes longer than that, if we are gone longer than that, that's fine. But just keep in mind that really all you need to make sure you get done here is to get all your data. You don't have to sit here and write your reports. In fact, I don't want you to because you haven't even handed in your other reports yet. So make sure you get all your data, make sure the entire group has it, And when it comes time to making your whiteboards, each experiment needs to make a whiteboard. So a temperature whiteboard and a lactose whiteboard, and you show each other to explain what you did. When it comes time to writing these up, you only have to write up the experiment you were directly involved in, not both. But you need to understand both for purposes of the quiz or the practicum eventually. So pay attention to each other when you present your little whiteboard things. Make sure you get a picture of the whiteboard before you leave, because that can be a bonus in your... You can get bonus points for it when you include a snapshot of it in your Word document. Go ahead.
So if they wanted us to record how long we did the shaking for, how does that affect the outcome of what we're doing?
The shaking of... You mean when you vortexed?
Yeah, in these little things?
Yeah.
They said that they wanted us to record how long we were shaking them for.
That's just to standardize it. You just want to give everything the same treatment. It's a controlled variable. All right, I'll stop recording then.